Welcome back, everyone, to the Way We Parent podcast. Paula here. This is episode 2 of season 2, and today I am talking to the girls from Upbringing. So Hannah and Kelty are twins, and they're both parent coaches. They're both moms of 2 children each, and they've created Upbringing, which is a fantastic resource for parents. Their podcast was one of the first podcasts I fell in love with. They are just so down to earth and funny, and their parenting style matches so much with what I believe in. Before we get on with the episode, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to everyone for all of your support with this new season. The fact that I'm in your ears right now, I am super, super grateful and super honored. So thank you guys so much. And again, as always, please do leave a review on Apple Podcasts because it really helps other people find the podcast. So without further ado, let's talk to Hannah and Kelty. Okay, so welcome, Hannah and Kelty. I'm so honored you guys are here. I wanted to, I guess, get started by asking you guys to tell everybody a little bit about yourselves.
Mm-hmm. We're so happy to be here, Paula. How do we introduce ourselves, Kel? We're usually twins, moms, speakers, parent coaches, tired
ladies. Yeah.
His back's hurt.
Works right? In progress. Yeah. On there.
Oh my gosh. I love that.
A little bit about Upbringing. We've been going for around 2 years. And we were certified in Simplicity Parenting, Positive Discipline, Rye Foundations, then some mindfulness and nonviolent communication. Upbringing is kind of an amalgamation of all of those things, but we basically focus on parenting for sanity and social change. So empowering parents to use powers beyond control in their discipline to look at their babies and their toddlers and their kids in a different way, especially around their resistance. So they're the big feelings and challenging behaviors that can so often lead us, even those of us who are progressive parents, to use non-progressive powers like control. Yeah. In our parenting. So we work a lot around those things to parent for what we call sanity and social change. So to create a home that feels good, relationships with our kids that feel good and that align with us personally, but that also create that greater social change that we're all hoping for and responsible ultimately for creating as well.
I love all of that. What prompted you guys to start to do this, to become parent coaches and create Upbringing?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I think we came from so many different fields.
Yeah, we absolutely did. I think when we became parents about 7 years ago, we each have 2 kids now who are 5 and 7. And when we became parents, I think it began what we like to call kind of our crash course in intensive personal growth. I think we realized right away that we had a lot to learn about patience, self-regulation, innovation, meeting our needs, meeting our baby's needs. Especially both of my kids are sensitive and spirited, and they were incredibly challenging from the start. And it was a really kind of interesting experiment with Hannah's similarly aged kids who just weren't quite as challenging. We're raising them exactly the same way, doing the same things, and really experiencing parenthood in a different way, and realizing that we had a lot to learn, right? Mm-hmm. About how to interact with these little humans in a way that fostered consent and respect and appreciation and skill building and all of these things that we had definitely not trained in or trained for. So we kind of like to thank them for beginning this adventure for us. Mm-hmm. Once that happened, we sort of just went to anyone we knew, and we just kind of cut through any conversation to like, what's going on? What's the hardest right now? We just wanted to talk about the hard stuff and find ways to turn it into the good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we realized that there's just so much kind of unspoken and lack of community around challenges with kids. I think there's a lot of shame in the parenting community in our culture that says we're supposed to know how to do it all. Our kids are supposed to be obedient and listen to us. And if they don't, if we struggle or they struggle, then there's something wrong with them or there's something wrong with us. And we began to realize that a lot of folks feel very alone. They feel very confused. They feel very shameful about normal, very common struggles with their kids.
Yeah.
And so I think so much about upbringing was saying, can we bring these things to light? Can we laugh about them a little? Can we normalize all of this a little bit, you know, and create that community that maybe folks don't have in their neighborhood or in their families?
Absolutely. Oh, so true. And I just was talking about this today on my social media about this idea that I used to have before I had kids is that, well, first of all, we were all perfect parents before we had kids, right? Mm-hmm. We all knew it all. And I just had this idea that a good parent had well-behaved kids, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, that couldn't be further from the truth once you start to actually realize that these are their own little people with their own little signature, and that temper tantrums and all of those things are natural. Like that's just what they're supposed to go through, right? And so it's such a mindset shift, but it can be so difficult when you have that mentality to not feel ashamed, because suddenly you have a toddler who's throwing tantrums and you're going, well, I'm supposed to know how to stop that. I'm supposed to have them under control, right? And so I think our journeys are very similar in that way. But I also think what's really fascinating, what you guys said there is about your kids being different. And I think that is a hugely misunderstood thing in parenting is, again, we think we have that control, right? It's like, we're going to go into it. And if we are this way, my child is going to be this way. But as it turns out, like you said, you guys were doing the same thing and your kids were different. So I think that's just so fascinating. And so I know you guys talk a lot about spirited kids, because of your experience.
Yeah. We love spirited kids.
Oh my gosh. Love spirited. I like to always say spirited and sensitive. And I think a lot of times folks, they say, what do you mean by spirited and sensitive? Or like those of us who have like moved beyond labels, they're like, don't even label my kids spirited or sensitive. Wait a second. What does that mean?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it, the reason why Kelty and I have created this is that we want to reclaim these terms, sensitive and spirited. And I think also the spiritedness of kind of harkens back to this idea of spirit within. So it's what we see our kids do, but it's also part of who they are. And I think when you kind of separate sensitive and spirited, we talk about sensitive as the way that our kids receive input from the world. So they have all these little sensory receptors, and some of our kids hear a really big noise. They hear like something going on, and that they don't experience it very sensitively. It doesn't hit them very hard. Other kids, really, really hard. It's like heavy duty. Their input, their sensitivity is just greater. And then the way that they then express the experience that's going on in their body is what we call their spiritedness. So they hear a loud noise, or they feel a sense of injustice, or they're hungry, or they're tired, whatever it is. So they may be feeling it more strongly. And then they might also be expressing that need and that experience more strongly also. And so I think everybody that, you know, they're not spirited and non-spirited. We're not talking in binary terms here, or sensitive and not sensitive, but thinking of our kids in that unique temperament on a spectrum is what we encourage parents to do, and what we ultimately had to do with our own kids, remembering, okay, they're not me. They're not my sibling as a baby. They're not their own sibling. They're not my partner. They are themselves. And what they're showing me and telling me is real for them in their bodies. And our job gets to be, do we want to work with that sensitivity and spiritedness, or do we want to work against it? Because the way we work with our kids' sensitivity and spiritedness is teaching them to view and work with theirs and others in the future, right?
I couldn't agree more. And I see that in my practice as I help with people with sleep. And this is huge because, again, there's so many rules out there of how, you know, how we should train babies and how they should behave a certain way, and how we should teach them to sleep and teach them to do this. And the reality is all of those things don't take into account that babies have different temperaments, right? That they have different sensitivities, they have different spiritedness, like you guys are saying. And so, I think we work against that. And then, you know, that's the result is we have all of these adults running around who don't know who they are because we weren't allowed to be who we were. Right.
Mm-hmm, right. And that's what the work we're doing, which is so tough because it goes against all of our instincts, right? It's calling out us to kind of summon this intuition that was silenced when we were kids,
right?
That is to say,
gosh, how can I find ways in my parenting, especially in those trickier moments, to support my child? So hold boundaries, hold limits, right? Teach, but do it in a way that's nurturing our kids' inner wisdom and authority. So the inner wisdom is the knowing how they feel, feeling okay to feel it, feeling safe in their bodies about their feelings and needs. And then that inner authority is communicating that, right? So again, mm-hmm. that's the sensitivity and the spiritedness, right? What we feel and then what we do or say. Love and we that. Support that, but we have to recondition everything we've learned, right?
Uh-huh.
It's really tricky.
Yeah. But what a gift too, right? And that's the way I see it, is like, it's hard. And it's also, I always think, if I didn't have my son, I probably wouldn't be doing all the self-development that I'm doing, you know, because they really force you to have to take a deeper look at yourself and question how you were brought up and all those things that you kind of internalized and you thought were true, but they're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our kids making us, I think it's easy for us to think they're making me doubt myself constantly. Gah. But mm-hmm. we like to think of it and reframe it as they're helping me question myself and challenge my beliefs, you know, right. question my upbringing, think about how my values as maybe a progressive person align with my parenting practices. Right. And that to raise ultimately a kid that has all of these, you know, qualities that we hope they have. So patience, respect, motivation, you know,
resilience.
Yeah. Resilience, all of these types of things. Like, we actually have to be practicing those with them for them to learn them. They don't just, they're not naturally cultivated. They're cultivated through relationship and in large part with us. So we always like to say we're all growing up together. We're growing up alongside our kids as absolutely. We're raising them. You know, that reparenting is happening for us too.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. And what I love so much is that you guys connect this back to social change, because I don't see this talked about enough in the parenting space. We talk about you hear a lot about gentle parenting and respectful parenting and how that's going to help our child as they grow. But what we're not talking enough about, in my opinion, is that when we're raising children with respect, and we're doing all of these things and allowing them to be their true selves, we're helping our society as a whole, right? And, you know, and we're hopefully instilling these values in them to help them be good citizens. And so I know you guys talk about feminist parenting. So can you tell me a bit about that and how feminism and parenting go hand in hand?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I mean, and feminist parenting could be exchanged for anti-racist parenting, could right. be exchanged for diversity, equity, and inclusion parenting, could mm-hmm. be exchanged for any of these kind of phrases that say, I have these values as a person. So in, you know, respecting and supporting all individuals, in being very conscious of my own power and privilege in relationships and institutions that I participate in, right? And then remembering, Kelty and I realized there was just kind of this hole in the parenting world where those things just somehow don't apply, right?
Mm-hmm. I think yeah. right. many people we work with are really just kind of getting going on this whole anti-racist parenting thing or this feminist parenting thing. They're buying the books, they're getting their kids the t-shirts and the onesies that with slogans that support their social justice missions. And they're taking them to the rallies and they're doing so many of these amazing things. They're having, you know, tough conversations, expanding their community of people, challenging their own privilege, all of these great things. But Han and I are always like, but what about your discipline? But what about the ways that you're right. showing up in those hardest moments with your kid? Are you teaching them, or what are you teaching them essentially about power? Because in the parent-child dynamic, we are the ones in power. We are the man in right. that institution, right? Mm-hmm. So the way we show up, the way we wield that power, the way we use that power is really important, right? Because we don't want to be abusing it. We don't want to be showing them that we can right. dominate, oppress, or harm those beneath us. And conventional discipline is basically all of those things.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all about maintaining the status quo, you know, don't question, do as you're told, all of those things. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I totally, totally agree. So, you know, I think, and I know that the people listening, most of my audience are parents of, you know, younger children. And I know what I hear a lot is that this can feel overwhelming, right? Especially when you're in the throes of infancy or toddlerhood, and you're really just trying to figure out how to, I don't know, how to sleep at night and like how to get through your day, right? And then all of a sudden, like these concepts can seem so big, like I'm raising an anti-racist child, a feminist child, all of these things. But how do we simplify that? How do we bring that back to what, like things that we can do day to day to raise these children, if that makes sense?
I love that you bring that up, Paula, because I think we all do. We feel overwhelmed. We feel helpless. We're like, we are privileged people. We need to be doing the work. How do we do the work? And then also we have these pressures and desires to be raising amazing kids who will like come home for Thanksgiving and like love their jobs and be in healthy relationships. But I think that Kelty and I just love boiling it down to the challenging moments, focusing on the challenging moments and how we show up and working from maybe the least challenging to all the way to the most challenging, and starting to dismantle the beliefs and the thinking and the approach that we had been used on us, you know, and that, that comes so naturally to us. And so we have a resistor approach that we have in a freedoms model available on our website that are great places to start, because I think a lot of parents are like, how do I honor their bodies, their spirits, their voices, their needs, right? Yeah. These toddlers, but I also get shit done at the same time. This sounds like, you know, conflict of interest. This sounds way too hard. And like, that is exactly what CEOs are saying too. How can I honor all of these employees, but make a buck at the end of the day or keep my business afloat? And this is a common thing. This is not a unique situation. The home is an institution very similar to many other institutions. So I think that just focusing on those challenges, that's when needs come up, that is our beautiful kind of beacon of light that says, oh, here's a learning moment, not just for my child, but mostly for me.
Right.
How can I show up in a different way that says, you've got needs, I've got needs. What do we do? I may be responsible for you, little person who I love, but I can't control you because I don't want to show you how to be controlled or control others in that way.
Yes.
So much of our power falls into the moments we have with our kids to show them this is how they can't learn. It's really difficult to think about this. And I think, you know, explicit teaching to our kids is important. It is critical. It's going to happen in schools, but I think there's so much implicit teaching that we can be doing and implicit learning they can be experiencing through the parent-child relationship.
Yeah.
Most of us or the caregiver that we work with closely are with them the majority of those like first 5 years. Mm-hmm. And that's where a critical foundation is created in their beliefs about someone in power, about someone with power and privilege, like a parent. That's eventually how they may look to an ideal CEO, to an ideal this. Then when they get more explicit learning about critical race theory, when they begin reading the books and having the conversations, it's going to make so much sense to them. It's going to be like, wow, this is wrong. What happened? And what's still happening. This does not make sense because I learned it in an implicit way where my body experienced it, right? My body experienced not being cared for in a certain way or cared for, being controlled, over controlled, or being given agency and freedom.
Yeah. Right?
And so we can't underestimate, I think for those of folks who are really overwhelmed by all of it, set that aside. It's going to happen, hopefully, and just focus in on your relationship with your child and think kind of metaphorically, like, what are they actually learning right now by the way that I'm engaging with them?
Yeah.
Right. Once our toddlers start testing and pushing and doing all the things, we can really easily focus on the behaviors. And so we want to shut down the behavior. We want to say no. We want to explain all the things.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. And we lean on that control toolbox, which we have an acronym for it. Consequences, on my terms, now, threats, rewards, overpower, lectures. We always throw in shame, blame, spanking, timeouts, basically the control model. And our kids might be learning, don't touch that plate or don't bop the baby or don't cross the street without me saying, okay. But they're also learning to control or to be controlled by other people using those same methods, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So. Yeah. Yeah. And then we wonder why they turn around and try to be controlling or, you know, when they're learning those things right from us. Right.
We had a coaching client recently say that her child peed in the closet and she said, why did you do that? And they said, I'm giving you a consequence for earlier. Right. Our kids are learning by the way we teach.
Yeah. They can't learn, you know, innovation by being given consequences. They can't learn empathy by being yelled at.
Right.
They can't learn, you know,
respect by being shamed about something they did.
Right.
They couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. Absolutely. I love that so much. I think in the, again, in the mainstream parenting kind of world, and when we're talking about the punishments and all of those things. And I think the goal, right, is that behavior, like the goal is a well-behaved child, a child who listens, a child who does what they're told, a child who, you know, does what's expected of them, right? For those of us who are not trying to do that, right, like we're not trying to control our children, what would you say would be a measure of success? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. When you can't control another person, you've decided you want to move past the conformity obedience model, right? That doesn't align with your values as an adult, right? I think that so much about it is like, there isn't, that's why I think it's really hard for people to wrap their minds around, because they're, instead right. of doing the quick fix immediate, I know this is working, quote unquote, because they stopped talking or because they apologized or they were forced to share or mm-hmm. whatever it was that we coerced them into doing. I think that it's harder to measure long-term change, right? And right. long-term practice. And it's, that goes against our culture as well. Our culture is all about quick fixes, show me immediately, right. make my life easier today, mm-hmm, rather exactly. than saying, actually, we're working on the long-term game here. We're scaffolding these skills and awareness. And I think mm-hmm. the one way that we measure it, and maybe Kelty, you have another idea, is just saying, how does it feel to me? And how does it feel to my child? And instead of saying what I'm seeing is working with my agenda and my expectations, let's look at relationship instead. Let's look at relationship and how I'm feeling in the moment. Am I feeling like my stuff is aligned, right? Is my child feeling safe and secure in their bodies or in their home or in relationship with me?
Right.
And that's a really good sign that things are moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's a lot of trust though.
I agree. And I think that if you can have a daily goal of just using connection instead of control, that would be the goal. In those moments that we want to snap to one of those tools in our control toolbox, can we just connect human to human, and mm-hmm. let that be the goal, whether it's a hard situation, whether it's an easy situation, whether it's chronic, whether it's acute, whatever it is, can we just connect human to human? Because that's what, that will be what they'll learn too. Mm-hmm.
And ultimately the way that if we're still in the obedience, conformity, compliance model, that is what ultimately changes behavior. When our kids feel safe, when they feel seen, when they feel soothed, when they feel connected to us, oh my right. gosh, we don't have to control them anymore. We're influencing them in a really positive way. And they're just so much more willing to grow, to trust us, to listen, to mm-hmm. move through things with us. But there's often a little bit of a rocky period for folks where they're like, I don't know if I can trust this. This feels really permissive, you know, and it's hard. You have to kind of believe it before you see it sometimes.
I think part of it is, yes, if we are raising our children, you know, in a way that's loving and respectful, like you're saying, generally children will do well when they feel well, right? So they are going to want to listen to us and to follow our lead. But at the end of the day, children also are wired to resist, to want to do things their own way, to not listen, right? And so I think that's where it can get really tricky for people, because then they see that and then they go, well, then obviously I'm doing something wrong.
Right. Yeah. We distrust our kids' resistance in a really big way, when resistance is just saying they're just needing a little bit more connection. They're needing a little something. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think so much that you bring up is saying, okay, if I can't imagine the perfect way to be treating my child in this moment, because mm-hmm. most of us can't, can we just think about how we would like to be treated? Right. And I think that's where the feminist parenting and the other types, anti-racist parenting, come in, is saying, how would I want to be treated by my boss in a work scenario? If I was struggling, if I, you know, messed something up, if I overstepped or underperformed, how would I want them to respond to me so that I want to show up to work, so that I still like them, so that I still like myself, so that I perform well and do well, essentially, like you just said. And I think that it's about loving limits. So it's about saying, as the person in power, getting really clear on what needs to be done. Is this absolutely necessary that it be done now in this way, at this time? And then if that's for sure, then we follow through lovingly about it. And so that takes the control all out of it. If we're following through as the responsible leader in a way that doesn't put distance between our child and us, or, you know, we've given them agency, we've given them information, we've given them time, and then we need to lovingly follow through. That is successful leadership in my mind, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gosh, yeah, I love that.
And it's so upholding all of those kind of progressive ideals. But I think, mm-hmm. like you said, Paula, it really asks that we redefine our kids' resistance as something necessary, as something natural, as something normal, mm-hmm. as something beautiful yeah. that's protecting that, you know, inner spirit, that yeah. inner wisdom. And
I think speaking back to the feminist parenting thing, I think we've come so far in these wonderful ways in redefining the feminine characteristics, right? Mm-hmm. What was high maintenance? We're like, okay, I'm particular, you know, stubborn, mm-hmm. I'm persistent, obsessive, I'm focused, emotional. I'm sorry, I'm just impassioned, mm-hmm. right? I'm too much for you. You mean I'm exceptional. Right.
Oh, I love that.
No, I'm confident. Right. But how can we be extending that same understanding, that same grace, that same truth ultimately for our kids?
Right.
We can believe Absolutely. It for ourselves. We have to believe it for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And not seeing their differences as flaws, but, you know, loving that about them and accepting their, who they are. Yeah. I think that's so amazing. And I have a question, because I know that this is what you guys like to ask. So I'm going to turn it back on you. What's hard right now?
Oh my gosh. That's such a great question. It's just like, where do we start, Paula? How long is this podcast?
How long? Like, yeah.
Say we're so privileged. We don't have the right to complain, but I'm like, but we do a lot.
Right. Yeah. And it's so funny, because I think, you know, I know myself, somebody who works with parents and stuff, I'm terrible at taking my own advice. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we don't think about ourselves quite that way. You know what I mean? So that's why I'm curious to know what you guys struggle with.
The hardest for me right now is my kids struggling with the swim lessons that we signed them up for. And just, it's really going against this instinct that I have to just be like, but you have to go, but you can't quit partway through, but we paid money for this, but you committed, but, you know, all these thoughts that keep burbling to the surface immediately. And I want to just control the situation. I want to teach them that when they sign up for something, they got to stick to it. And it's embarrassing as a parent that they're always leaving the lesson in the middle. And I think it's been such hard work for me to be accepting them and not feeling like I have to convince them out of their feelings and their experience and the way that they are moving through this really new thing, this learning how to swim thing, this being in a class thing, all this stuff. Yeah, we've had to do a lot of retraining ourselves to talk it through. Kelly, you've been talking to me a lot, and we've been talking about experiences you had that lead you to not just believe that, but struggle with your kids making a different decision. And it, you know, we've been in sports, organized sports and collegiate level sports that have been really high intensity, where we had that pressure, like, you can't get out of this. You've committed and you're in. You know, I've dropped out of a doctoral program in the first year, which I still, like, inside I have shame about, even though it was my choice and my education and my decision, because it wasn't working for me. But I think so much about it is these opportunities with our kids, they help us work through our own shit.
Absolutely. For sure.
If we can take the time, we can't always, but and then my kids have been, you know, why aren't Wilder and Inigo doing swimming? Like, they're struggling with, like, Wilder and Inigo taking a different choice and having their different feelings. And so I've had to be on the other side with my kids, kind of neutrally kind of translating, saying, your needs are different. Their needs, this is how they want to be with the teacher. This is their relationship with the teacher. But it's been a really, really good experiment for Kelty and me, especially with their charter school coming up in a month. So
we're imagining a lot of school resistance.
Oh
coming.
Man. Yeah. I mean, they've been wild and free for quite a while. So
I was just going to ask, you have, I know you both have kids that are 5 and 7, right?
Yeah.
And so what is the school situation for your little ones right now?
Yeah, they all started in Montessori for the first few years, like preschool and kindergarten. And then pandemic, the last 2 years, we've been unschooling, which they kind of already did at home. And then we've decided to attempt a small charter school that's agricultural based and that's close by. It's small classrooms. It's supposedly, you know, learning that is catered to each child, but we have our struggles with it. We're excited about it. They're going to be somewhere for 6 hours and like our houses will stay the same as when they left. They'll come back. Like we don't have all the messes. Like, I mean, it seems ideal in so many ways, but our kids have also learned how to be self-advocates or not learned how they've continued to be self-advocates, let's say. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
they're some very conscientious consumers of their own education, of their own lessons, of their own eating, mm-hmm. of their own play, of their own everything.
Right. So in this charter school, they wear just polo, any color polo shirt and like khakis or navy pants. And already our girls are like, I will not be told what to wear. This is ridiculous. I'm going to be wearing my pajamas every day. Let's see them if they stop me, you know? And so that's kind of where we're like, oh my gosh, we've created this or allowed this. Right. And
right.
It's beautiful, but now it's making it really hard for us. And how are we going to support, you know, them and the culture we've created in our families and then bridge that outside world and those expectations and other institutions that we're testing out. You know.
Oh, I love that. The honesty about getting them out of the house. And I think I struggle with this myself. I only have a 2-year-old, but so far he's been home. And, you know, I've learned a lot about unschooling. And I think the idea of it sounds incredible. But it is draining to be with our kids all day long too, right? Mm-hmm. So he's going to be going to a nursery school soon. So I just, you know, I wanted to really point that out for people listening, because I think there's this idea that there's people who raise their kids at home and, you know, we're supposed to love every moment and it's supposed to come naturally to us, but it, you know, sometimes we do want that time away from them and that's okay too.
Oh my gosh.
We don't just want it. We need it. It's critical.
Yeah.
It's critical.
And we should be transparent too. In the first like 6 months of the pandemic, we were home with all four kids all the time while we were trying to work. And since then have been able to have a single caregiver come for a chunk of 4 days a week to be with the kids so that we can do more work. So we're not even with them all the time.
No,
but it was a hard time.
I love that you're normalizing that though, Paula, and saying like, there's no right or perfect combination or amount of time we should spend with our kids. Mm-hmm. And if anything, like I definitely believe that I'm a better parent because I spend time apart from my kids, because I do my work and this work, and it's going to look different for everybody and it's going to ebb and flow over time. But I love that you're encouraging folks to not feel inhibited in saying, let's try out a daycare. Let's try out a caregiver. Or let me, you know, I don't even have to have a legitimate reason that I'm making money to be able to get support. If
or
I can
hey partner,
it.
I'd like half of Saturday off or all of Sunday or three evenings a week. Can we make that happen? Mm-hmm. I don't have a pressing engagement. I just want to be alone.
I have me, which is kind of important in this scenario.
Yes. Yeah. And how hard is that for us to really wrap our heads around? Like, I know I've struggled with that. I've definitely come a long way since I'm lucky my husband's been working from home throughout the pandemic and continues to work from home. So we've had to figure out a way for us to both get our work done and take that time. And so we kind of have like scheduled time that basically is my time to work and whatever. I've started to more and more take that time and be like, I don't have anything scheduled today. I'm going to go sit on the front porch by myself.
Awesome. Just, I love it.
You know, I just did that before this call and it was the best thing ever. Like I was like, I just sometimes need to not be needed.
I love that. I think you allude to that idea that so many of us were like progressive parents. We're trying to do the respectful, mindful, you know, conscious thing with our kids, right? We're helping them, you know, grow to be strong self-advocates. So we're advocating for their needs and their personal freedoms in these early years. But I think very often it can feel really uncomfortable because we realize that we aren't advocating for our own.
Right.
Oftentimes when we're doing all of this for our kids, I have this little thought that comes in my mind. What about me? This mm-hmm. doesn't feel fair, right? The child in me comes out when I'm working with my child very often. It's like, but I want to rest, but I want to not pick up that stuff, but I want someone to make me lunch, but I want someone to talk to me, but I want someone to, you know, read me a book or whatever it is. And so
I know, right?
I like normalizing that feeling too. And recognizing that that can feel unnatural and uncomfortable to have our own needs start coming to the surface. But that's the beginning of all that personal work that you said, Kelsey, where we're able to start realizing that our needs don't just matter as much as our kids, but sometimes they matter more if we're going to be able to show up for them in the way that we want.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's so true. Right. I know when, you know, when like your kid is resisting bedtime and you're like, I wish someone would put me to sleep right now. Yeah. I wish someone would let me. I wish someone would push me in a stroller around and I could nap. Can you imagine?
Oh my gosh.
The stroller one is huge for me.
I know. When you're tired, you're like, oh, are you kidding me? No. But yeah, no, I love that. Thank you for sharing those things that are hard for you guys. Cause I think, yeah, that is so, so crucial. I can tell you for me, one of the things I've been struggling with recently is, you know, my son, like he hasn't had time to socialize. I'm a little bit jealous of you guys and your kids having each other because my little guy is like all alone and he's going to be going to daycare, which I know will be great for him. But right now he's very slow to warm. And so I've been trying to take him to the park and really just expose him to more kids. And I'm trying to meet new people because we just moved to a new town and we don't know anybody. And he is very slow to warm and it's very hard for me to deal with that. You know, we basically went to the park today and it was busy and we spent most of the time sitting watching. Yeah, that's my thing today. It's challenging. It's challenging. And I you know, I advocate for letting him have his space and not pushing. And it's hard to, I found myself, you know, still being like, but are you sure you don't want to go up the slide? Are you sure you don't want to, you know, like, come on, like, you see, there's no one there. You can go, you know, so.
Yeah. So often that's such I think a common concern that you're expressing. And I love that you're normalizing that too, that fear or concern. Is our kid getting enough socialization? Is our kid successful socially? Because we know social emotional learning is like far more important and impactful on a child and a growing child than you know, academics or certain things like that in those early years. And it's,
right.
But it's also, we can so easily just kind of measure it in particular ways. So the more outgoing they are, the better they are doing, right. You know, the less outgoing, the less well they're doing. And, you know, like we do, it's untrue, but you're battling with those beliefs and challenging those in your mind, you know?
Totally, that you've been taught that's how it's supposed to be. And if your child doesn't say hi to other kids, well, what's wrong with them? Right. And it's just his personality. And I definitely believe that, you know, he's here to teach me something. Right. And a part of that is patience. I mean, aren't all kids here trying to teach us patience? But yeah, it's so interesting to have to deal with that. I'm sure we'll have to deal with that if we ever do sign him up for any kind of organized event like you guys are talking about with swimming. I'm sure he'll be slow to warm for that too.
Yeah, so. Trust. Mm-hmm. Trust in our kids and their process, the way they show up, because that's exactly where they need to be to feel safe and secure in their bodies. And when they feel safe and secure in their bodies, they're more able to learn and to grow.
Take risks,
do all those things, but they have to feel safer. So whatever they're doing that we're seeing that's triggering us is good. It's actually positive. Right.
I love that so much.
So hard though. So hard.
I know it is. It's always, yeah, it's easier said than done. Right. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. It's those hard moments that really, really do the teaching. So I'm curious to know for anybody listening, how do you guys support families? And if people, you know, are listening and they like what they hear, how can they get support from you?
Yeah. So they could head to our website at upbringing.co and also our Instagram community, which is also at upbringing.co. We support families on Instagram with a lot of content, side-by-side helpful phrasing and mantras primarily, as well as videos, like short videos and live Q&A videos. And those Q&A videos go to our podcast. So if you're more of a podcast listener, you can head to our Upbringing podcast also. But aside from that, we have written guides in our shop. We have small group coaching. We call it the Spirited Kids Club. So we join together with 8 other parents or caregivers of spirited kids to just work on that skill building we talked about earlier so that we can support their sensitivity and their spiritedness in ways that align with us. Mm-hmm. And then we do one-on-one coaching also. We're getting a membership community up and running as well. So that folks can just connect awesome. With each other more. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of stuff in the pipeline, but yeah, we're around and always here to talk about sensitive spirited kids, big feelings, challenging behaviors,
not so much the sleep stuff. We send most people to you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. It's a tricky one for sure. But no, that is all super amazing. I love that so much. And I definitely have some of your guides, by the way. If anybody here who's listening is not familiar, Hannah and Kelty have an amazing eye for design. You guys have a background in design, do you not?
Kelty does. Yeah.
Kelty does. Okay. Which makes total sense because your Instagram is beautiful, but all of your little guides and printables are absolutely gorgeous. And yeah. So if you guys want some cool art to put up in your house and remind you of all those amazing values that you're trying to embody, I think definitely head to the Upbringing store.
The spirited kid mini guide we'd love to offer you and your community. So it's helpful phrasing and mental mantras that just help reframe the whole spirited, sensitive kid dynamic.
Oh, I love that so much. Another question I have for you guys, before I let you go, I'm curious to know, what do you do for self-care? What replenishes you guys and fills your cup?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We like to walk. Mm-hmm. I think that's my number one thing, is just getting out and getting my body moving in nature, and just mm-hmm. talking through work stuff with Hannah, or talking through life challenges with Hannah, or just walking silently and trying to mm-hmm. to be mindful. Yeah. Is my thing.
Yeah. I think that helps us just kind of recenter ourselves. We don't always have time to sit in quiet meditation. We don't always mm-hmm. have time to, like, you know, go to the spa or do other more like traditional self-care things, but we can always find a place to walk, find a little shade, move our bodies. And it's incredible what that does, to just my mental space, to my somatic experience,
and our creativity,
creativity and the way we show up interpersonally with our partners and with our kids. It's been just a game changer to find that.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I love that you said, like, the traditional sort of self-care things. I think we hear a lot about that these days. And they have their place. Like, I mean, hello, I would love a spa day. Like, don't get me wrong, but you know, it's not always doable. Right. And I think it's so important to realize that we can find those moments, obviously, even with our kids sometimes. Like for me, for example, like there are days where I don't have a choice. Like I have to be with my son. I can't just leave him to go meditate by myself, but I maybe take him to the beach or to the park or somewhere. You know, we're lucky enough to be close enough to the lake and be able to go to the beach. And it is the most grounding thing for both of us. And so, yeah, I'm not taking a break from him, but I am still getting that nourishment for my own soul, if that makes sense.
I love that. Yeah. It doesn't have to be anything special, anything expensive. I mean, even just coming back to our breath, it sounds so silly and woo woo, but just saying, even if the only thing I can do to care for myself is to focus on my breathing and to nourish my body with some nice deep breaths, even that in those moments that we can't kind of escape and run away, so to speak, can matter a lot for us, for sure.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. So yeah, I love everything. I know I could talk to you guys all day because everything you guys talk about is super aligned with what I believe in. So thank you guys so much for coming on. And I'm sure thank everybody you. Is going to learn so much from you.
Thank you so much.
It's great.
Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I did. If you enjoyed it, please go on iTunes and give us a review so that others can find us, and share it on your socials. Join me on Instagram at Paula Morales McDowell and keep the conversation going. What did you love? What questions do you have? Who do you want to hear from next? Catch you next week.